From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Well, it's the final countdown, 2 days away from the fourth Thursday in November cooking marathon, otherwise known as Thanksgiving. We're here with three incredible chefs today to talk the bird, the sides, the pies, and more. This hour On Point, three top chefs answer your Thanksgiving food questions. You can join us on air or online. The phones are open. Call or tweet us your questions before you go into the kitchen for Thursday. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in our studio, some delicious food and three nationally acclaimed chefs. Bridget Lancaster, executive food editor for New Media, Television, and Radio at America's Test Kitchen, and a lead instructor for America's Test Kitchen Cooking School. She helped put together the new family cookbook and the Cook's Illustrated Thanksgiving Guide. It's linked to our website at onpointradio.org. Bridget Lancaster, welcome to On Point. So nice to have you.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
Barton Seaver, author, award-winning chef, and director of Sustainable Seafood and Health Initiatives at Harvard School of Public Health. His recent cookbooks include Where There's Smoke, about sustainable grilling, and the National Geographic Kids Cookbook. He was named Chef of the Year in 2009 by Esquire magazine for his work at several restaurants in Washington. Barton Seaver, welcome to you. Nice to have you.
Thanks. Real pleasure to be back.
And Anna Sartoun, the executive chef and co-owner of the restaurant Oleana and Sofra Bakery in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and co-owner of Sarma Restaurant. She won the James Beard Award for Best Chef in the Northeast in 2011. Her cookbook is called Spice, Flavors of the Eastern Mediterranean. Anna Sartoun, so nice to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So with a wealth of information and knowledge in front of me, where do I start? What should I be doing right now? Right now to prepare for Thursday for Thanksgiving, if I'm cooking at home?
Well, I think the big elephant in the room is actually the turkey. So, we should probably talk about that big bird.
All right. The great turkey debate begins.
Exactly.
How do we cook it?
Well, I think there's so many different ways to cook it. People grill now. They deep fry. They roast, of course, roast in parts. But the number one complaint that people get about turkey and when they're finally eating it is that the meat is flavorless, it's not seasoned, and it's dry.
Right.
It's overcooked. So there are a couple of different ways that you can go about preparing your turkey now and think about, a couple of days in advance. I'm assuming that everyone out there has thawed their turkey at this point because it's almost too late, really, if you haven't done it so far.
Because it takes about how long?
It's about a day, per 5 pounds. So you need to, for a 15-pound turkey, you're talking about at least 3-4 days in advance.
All right. Jumping in here about the turkey debate, do you brine, grill, salt, something else on a Sartoun?
Brine and roast. Love it.
Yeah?
My favorite. And then I have a really big bird this year, so I'm going to break it down into drumsticks, breast, and then I'm going to debone the thighs and stuff them with stuffing and roll them up and tie them and roast them.
So you're cutting apart the turkey. You're not putting it all in at once.
Not this year because I have a really big bird. I also think it comes out absolutely perfect and succulent, and it doesn't need as much time in the brine. It cooks faster, and then I get to make a really great – I have time to make a really great turkey broth from all the bones. I get to roast them and simmer it.
Barton, what about you?
Well, I'm a big fan of smoking a turkey. So, there's a debate on whether or not to dry brine, just using a salt sugar rub on the outside to effectualize the same effect as you get from a wet brine. I do a wet brine and then lightly smoke it. I use a mixture of orchard woods, peach and apple being my favorite, and you get that slow, sexy, sultry, seductive scent of the season. Deeply dark caramelized color bird on the table.
I'm changing my plans now.
Let me get Sarah in here with a question about the turkey. She's in Boston. Hi, Sarah. Glad you called. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. My question is, I'm looking to brine a 26-pound turkey. I've been told to do it for 6 to 8 hours. My question is, how long should I let it dry in the fridge?
For a bird that big, you'll want to let it dry at least one night. Put it in on a rack, set over a sheet pan so that can catch any drips. You don't really want to cover that because you want that excess moisture to evaporate in the fridge. You're going to have a big fridge for that giant bird, I have to say. But at least overnight, if you can do it a full day in advance, you'd be well to do that.
Anna?
I would do exactly the same way. And you're going to want to keep that. You're going to want to keep it for as long as you can before you cook it. It's a big bird.
Any good ideas for the random parts of the turkey?
The random parts.
Random.
Well, I think that, you know, to Anna's point that, you know, doing this rich broth that you're able to boil down and not just use pan drippings for a sort of a last minute sauce, but really put some effort into a really rich gravy. You know, I love the giblets. I love the neck, you know, simmering that into the stock in a very slow, you know, precise manner so that you're actually able to get a little bit of meat off it, mix that into the last minute into the stuffing, but extract all that flavor in the process. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the gravy? You brought that up. What makes a good gravy?
Tradition.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's one of those things like Sunday brunch. I'm never going to get it right because it's the way your mother made it or your father made it that's perfect for you. And, you know, it's like iced tea, things like coffee. I mean, everybody just requires it to be such a perfect way and so unique. That,
okay, but what if my mom didn't make gravy? Help me, Bridget.
For me, roasting, I agree with Anna, the roasting the bones along with vegetables and then simmering that with, you can use chicken stock to simmer it with some water, and simmering that down to make a really rich, flavorful turkey broth. And all those bones are also going to give that broth gelatin. So it's going to feel really rich and you know, very, it's not going to taste like it came out of a can. You can actually, the next day after you make the stock, put it in the fridge, let that set up, and then you have all this turkey fat that rises to the top. So you can skim that off and use that to make a roux. So you have a really rich turkey-flavored roux to start out your gravy.
Barton, go ahead.
Well, along with that, you know, I do prefer that sort of the same method of that deep, rich roasted stock. But one thing that we don't typically use a lot of at Thanksgiving time is acid. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think a lot of chefs will agree that acid, vinegar, lemon juice, citrus, it really punctuates and highlights flavors. So in gravy, I like to finish it with just a little dash of good quality red wine vinegar or sherry vinegar to really just punctuate it.
Mm. Give it a pop.
I agree. That's the secret to mine, too. You always have to finish it because, I mean, you've got all these really, really rich flavors that, you know, make it heavy and you need some brightness to come through and you don't want to taste. If you use a little lemon juice or you use a little vinegar, it's not necessarily that you taste it. It's just to lift the flavors up and out. Yeah. So a little bit at the end is brightens up the gravy.
All right. I can't wait anymore. In front of us is actually, Bridget, this is your stuffing, right? So tell us about what we have here.
So this is a bread stuffing. And I have to say, I am a cornbread stuffing aficionado. Yeah. This is the one bread stuffing that I really like. So it's bread stuffing. This one, it has sausage and it has dried cherries and toasted pecans. But the reason I love this stuffing so much, you know, there's always the debate, do you stuff the turkey itself? Do you make it on the side?
Yes.
And, you know, typically we advise people not to stuff the whole bird for safety reasons. It's really hard, especially if you have a large turkey, to roast it accurately.
Unhealthy, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. It's a matter of food safety. But the other problem is that cavity is just not big enough. You want a nice big portion of stuffing to feed your crowd. So this one, we were able to get that turkey flavor into the stuffing itself. You roast this underneath turkey wings. So you place brown turkey wings on top of the entire stuffing, roast it in or bake it in the oven, and all those drippings and the fat go into
still moist.
That's right.
Right.
So it gets the flavor of the turkey without actually having to put it inside the turkey.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And then you get to eat the turkey wings.
Yeah.
Which I would say is one of the best parts of the bird.
It's really good. Really, really good. Any thoughts about stuffing?
Well, is that another – would you also use the giblets and the neck for that same purpose?
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. It's just going to heighten it.
It just revolutionized my thing. Thank you.
More flavor. So that's a great way to achieve is maximum flavor. Yeah.
Let's get Connie in here from Portage, Wisconsin. Connie, welcome to On Point.
Yes. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
My question is about the side dishes. I can handle the turkey and the dressing, but I have children coming on Thursday and then another batch on Friday, so I'm making two separate meals, and it's a lot of work. So what I've done this morning is I made huge, big batches of all my side dishes, scallop, corn, green beans, sweet potatoes, spinach salad, grape apple salad, and divided them and put them in my refrigerator. Are they going to be okay?
Are you going to be okay?
Yeah. But what can you make ahead of time? What should you make ahead of time before Thanksgiving?
Well, I think sweet potatoes hold very well. whether or not they're roasted, and you can keep them in their jackets, and roast them whole and then pull them out and just gently rewarm to make the whatever final dish you're doing. Even if you're making a mashed sweet potato, because there's not a lot of starch in that, they're not setting up hard like a mashed white potato would. So that's something that does last a bit ahead. But also I think, you know, some of the dishes that I think we'll talk about a little bit later, fresh, light, bright dishes that aren't necessarily cooked, those salads, you can make the vinaigrette ahead of time and then just a simple chopped celery, chopped vegetables, you know, tossed a la minute almost as nice additions to the meal.
What would you make ahead of time, Anna?
Yeah, well, I think all the mise en place, so, you know, which is the, you know, basically everything, all the components that you need, and then so that on the day or the day before even, you're putting things together. So peeling your potatoes, peeling your carrots if you're peeling them, washing all your vegetables, making vinaigrette, dicing, all that kind of stuff. Lots of onions. For me, Thanksgiving is all about the onion and a little bit of butter, a lot of butter, I guess. but those are that's the body of it. Lots of onions, lots of butter.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Thanksgiving Day food, traditions, problems, recipes, all of it with three amazing chefs today. Anna Sortoon, executive chef and co-owner of Oleana Restaurant and Sofra Bakery in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Barton Seaver, named Chef of the Year by Esquire magazine in 2011, author of four cookbooks. And Bridget Lancaster, executive food editor for New Media, Television and Radio at America's Test Kitchen, part of Cooks Illustrated. Their Thanksgiving guide is linked to our website at onpointradio.org. Let's go right to the phones. Wethersfield, Connecticut. Marguerite is on the line. Hi, Marguerite. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. I'm so excited. I think you can help me with my dilemma. I have a 22-pound turkey that I'm delivering about an hour away from my home on the day of Thanksgiving. I'm not in charge of any of the fixing, thank goodness. It's just the turkey and maybe a pie or two. And my question is this: how can I cook it at home and get it to where I need to get it and carve it when I get there without having it slosh all over the place and be dried out? I'm just worried about it not tasting good.
I would be too. Marguerite, here's someone else with a similar problem, Allison in Nashville, Tennessee. Allison, go ahead. Welcome.
Yes, I also have a traveling problem. I'm going from Nashville up to Michigan to my boyfriend's parents' house, and I'm bringing up a appetizer, a brie stuffed in puff pastry, and a pumpkin buttermilk pie. And I was just wondering how much of that I can make ahead, or do I need to really make it there so the brie is really melty and gooey?
All right, Allison, thank you. What about it? What about traveling meals, transporting your food? How do you do it? Make it still taste good.
Well, I guess I'll tackle the brie first. The pie sounds like as long as you can keep it cold or keep it hot, you know, for food safety purposes, that should be made ahead, certainly. But then the brie, certainly baked on premise. It doesn't take too long, the puff pastry, not 20 minutes or so in an oven, as long as you can clear out some space and not get in a fight with relatives over that. But real estate is precious, I understand. That should really be done there. In terms of transporting a 22-pound bird, wow, I'm gonna toss that over to my right here.
Anna or Bridget, what do you think?
Foil, it's actually gonna rest. It needs a little time to rest anyway. So, and it'll just be juicier, you know, when you get there. Hopefully, as long as it's you know, cooked really well, you just wrap it in foil, and I would put it in something that's deep, you know, so that it doesn't get knocked around. You know, any sort of vessel that's got high sides on it, and wrap it in foil and let it rest.
Mm. Let it rest, Bridget.
Yeah, I agree. Some of our turkey recipes actually call for resting the turkey for up to an hour anyway. Mm. So, I mean, with a 22-pound bird, I would actually recommend possibly roasting it in parts as well. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to take the whole turkey, it's going to be much easier to roast the breast and the leg and the thigh separately. It's going to be much easier to transport. And then once you get there, you can just place the parts on a rack sitting over a baking sheet and pop it in a 450 oven for 15 minutes to re-crisp the skin. And then it'll be really nice and hot, but it'll be rested, so it's easier to carve. Mm.
Yeah. All right. Marguerite and Allison, good luck. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Here's Karen in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course. Go ahead.
This is the night before Thanksgiving, and I'm in charge. We're roasting a whole beef tenderloin, which after it's been trimmed will be about 7 pounds. Mm. So I would like to set it at a high oven for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, shut the oven off, and let it keep cooking without opening the door. And I'm not sure how long I need to keep the oven off and let it sit there.
All right, Karen. Bridget, I've actually seen you on America's Test Kitchen talking about beef tenderloins. Yeah, take this.
So for beef tenderloin, the slow roasting idea is great. However, I would be worried about it being in there overnight. Usually overnight roasts, I know that Heston Blumenthal did an overnight roast for prime rib a couple of years ago. But that was, I believe, a 150 or 200 degree oven, and it was a huge roast, prime rib. The beef tenderloin, I'm really worried that it would be dried out. Mm. By the next morning. So what you can do is salt the beef the night before. Actually, beef tenderloin doesn't take a very long time to roast in the oven. Salt the beef tenderloin the night before. Just rub it with a little bit of salt, and that way it'll get nice and seasoned. And then in the morning, rub it with a little bit of olive oil. Put it in a very hot oven to start, about 425, and let it roast in there for about 45 minutes, 50 minutes. You want to take the temperature in a few different spots. You want that roast beef to be about 130, 135 for medium rare. Mm. So it really isn't that long of a roast for the night, for the morning of, if you can do it that way.
So it doesn't dry out?
Yeah.
Barton, tell us what you brought here today. We're going to go to sides now, side dishes. This is delicious, crunchy celery salad.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that if you think about the traditional Thanksgiving side dishes, all of them tend to be creamy, fully cooked, hot dishes. And I think something on the side that's easy, fun, crispy, cool, room temperature, that's easy to put together is really key. And this is a very inexpensive salad to put together until you put the cheese on. But it's just chopped celery, very thinly sliced on a bias.
Dressed, with some pecans.
Dressed with lemon juice, olive oil, and a little bit of whole grain mustard. And then that warm flavor of pecans in there. Mm. And what I love is the combination of that cool, crisp celery, the warm, nutty crunch of the pecans, and then the salt in this is really added with a little bit of Parmesan cheese or a Stravecchio or, you know, any sort of dried aged cheese, even a dried goat cheese would be really, really great with this. Mm. And simple to put together. And literally the vinaigrette is no harder than squeezing a lemon and tossing all the ingredients together is 3-minute salad.
Very autumnal.
Yes.
Really tastes very good. All the recipes, by the way, are on our website, onpointradio.org. Anna Sortoon, tell us what you brought us here today.
I brought some maple roasted carrots, rainbow carrots from our farm in Sudbury, Massachusetts, Sienna Farms, with a pecan labneh. And I just scrubbed the carrots, cut them in half lengthwise, roasted them, tossed them in a little olive oil, garlic, and maple syrup. And I can't do much without a little bit of spice, so I used a little bit of ground cinnamon, ground cumin, paprika, roasted them for about 25 minutes until they get kind of caramelized, and then served them with some labneh. Labneh is a really thick yogurt. It's basically yogurt that's strained of its water, and it becomes really thick, almost like a mascarpone cheese would be thick. And that has lots of ground pecans in it.
Oh, the combination of spices is delicious.
Thank you.
Mm. Wonderful. Bridget, I'm still trying to figure out how you get all this together on the table at the right time. So the rolls are warm, which, by the way, we have here. Delicious.
Thank you.
Rustic dinner rolls. Mm-hmm. How do you get the rolls on the table so they're warm? The turkey's just right. It's not dry. You've got all your sides like we have here. What's the trick? What's the secret? Is it practice? Is it magic? What is it?
I think it's a little bit of both, but it's a lot of planning. So things like rolls. Rolls can be made days in advance. You throw them into the freezer, and then they don't even need to defrost. You can put them on a sheet pan. pan, put them in the oven, 5-10 minutes, 375, and they will be just as if you had baked them that day. So that takes the pressure off. I think the other part is remember that the turkey needs to rest. So while that turkey is resting for up to an hour, you have all this time to finish those sides. You can even have the turkey carved and ready and then bring everything else out to the table. I love the idea of the celery salad because it does take the pressure off both the oven and the stovetop. It's perfect.
Excellent. Alice is in Greensboro, North Carolina. Hi, Alice. Welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a pretty easy dish. It's a crock pot sweet potato dish, but there are vegans involved, and so I need a vegan butter alternative. And my question is, do I make one with the real butter and one with the vegan butter, or will my non-vegan folks not even be able to tell the difference if I get the right substitute and I can just do one big crock pot?
You are very accommodating, Alice. That's what I got to say. Anna, what do you think?
Well, you could do one of each, but I think what works really nice is using a nut in a form of fat and using something like almond milk. One of the things I do is a scordelia with celery roots. So just like your sweet potatoes, I puree them. But instead of putting cream and butter in it, I take blanched almonds and olive oil and water and put them in a blender and blend them until it's really white and thick. Like it looks like cream. And then fold that into the celery root, and that's a great. It makes it very rich. You obviously miss the butter flavor, but it's still got some good fats in it, and it tastes really delicious.
So, any advice broadly for vegan or vegetarian Thanksgivings that you'd offer?
Well, I think it comes to another point as well that, you know, we have such a protein-centric meal here that the turkey, you know, the elephant in the room, as it was called at the very beginning. To me, it's really the sides that make everything fun. And as Anna was talking about, there's ways to introduce that richness, both through the flavor of spices, you know, that are really punctuating the meal, through acid, through spice, through different forms of interest, but also, you know, By really accommodating a much larger array of vegetables, cooking a smaller turkey, really putting the focus on this broader array, not only are we accomplishing some mission towards a healthier, not only environmentally option, but we're also sort of engaging a lot more of the modern diets that are very diverse in terms of ethics, but also a more healthful meal itself for us.
Talk about some of the other sides. Potatoes. Let's start with potatoes. Mashed, scalloped, something new, brown sugar, sweet potatoes. You know, we had the marshmallows on top when I was a kid. We still do. We cannot get rid of them. What about them, Bridget?
My family would start, you know, a protest if I didn't have mashed potatoes on my table.
Yes.
I love mashed potatoes, but they are a vehicle for the perfect beverage at Thanksgiving, which is gravy. So you have to have the mashed potatoes and gravy. Sweet potatoes, I grew up with the candied yams with the marshmallows as well. I still love it. But I love mashed sweet potatoes just because it's so easy to do. It's just lightly seasoned. You get some nice salt. The sweetness is on their own. And as Barton said, they're great to make the day before as well.
What do you think, Anna?
Well, the mashed potatoes is, I think, what everyone expects for Thanksgiving. You can't have Thanksgiving without mashed potatoes. It's so on our minds right now. And I think the baking potato makes a great good russet makes a good mashed potatoes. Using a ricer is a great tool from great mashed potatoes. So boiling them, letting them dry out a little bit, ricing them, and then putting a hot mixture of milk and butter into them. That's the perfect
potato. And just stir.
The less stirring you do, the better they'll be. Just stir until they're incorporated.
I've got one little tip on the potatoes, which is when we're boiling potatoes, we tend to just fill up the pot all the way to the top with water. But the flavor of potatoes is highly water soluble. And if you taste the water when you're done boiling your potatoes, you're tasting very potato flavored water. So I just barely cover the potatoes. You know, so the less water, the less flavor you're going to leach out. And I also like to add in just whole cloves of garlic right along with the potatoes as they boil. It loses all that garlic.
Right,
loses all of that bitter acerbic nature to it. It softens sweetly and it becomes nutty and aromatic. And then finishing it, just mashing the garlic right in with the potatoes, using a little bit of that potato water itself. You know, if you're trying to make mashed potatoes taste like potatoes, why don't you use potato flavor? Mm. You're basically making a potato stock and then finishing it with just a little bit of Greek yogurt or the labneh that Anna was talking about earlier. Makes a really nice, pungent, very potato-flavored dish.
Mm. Here's Gerald in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Gerald. Welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jen.
Hi.
Greetings from Tidewater, Virginia.
Fantastic.
We just had a sustainable seafood festival. It was great. And I am just terrible with turkey on Thanksgiving. So I'm interested in ideas for incorporating seafood dishes into our Thanksgiving feast this year.
Seafood.
All right. Seafood it is. Yeah, we were just talking earlier to the program that my wife and I moved to Maine recently, and so lobster is quite plentiful, and we trade our backyard eggs for lobster up there. And I was thinking about actually making a lobster stuffing. But a whole roasted fish makes as dramatic and beautiful of a presentation as does a turkey, and especially down Tidewater region, you've got striped bass, whole bluefish still in season down there, really delicious, incredible fish, and when fresh, scale them up, you know, score the skin, put little lemon slices in there, fill the cavity with thyme, throw it in an oven. Same thing as we were talking about with the beef tenderloin, sort of high temperature to start, turn the oven off and let it cook. And when you're cooking that whole fish, you've got such leeway on it. You're not going to dry it out and, you know, present the entire thing at the table. And it takes a little craft to remove the fillets without the bones. But I believe you probably find some good videos on maybe on America's Test Kitchen about this. Some Bridget showing you how. But
Gerald's question begs the question, are you traditionalists or are you experimenters on Thanksgiving? Bridget Lancaster, do you stick with the tried and true or do you kind of step outside the box a little bit?
I try to step out of the box. I tiptoe out of the box. How about that? I stay to the classics mostly, but there's always one thing that I'll do that still is appropriate for the season, but it's a little bit different. For instance, this year, instead of a pie, I'm making butterscotch pudding with ginger snaps. You know, the butterscotch pudding is very, very deeply flavored, and that way I can also put it into the serving dishes, have it already ready to go, and don't have to worry so much about a pie.
Is there a tradition worth breaking on a Sortoon?
I think everyone is craving those traditional flavors, and I every once in a while I ask, can I do duck instead of turkey this year? And no, can't change it. So, but you know where I have a lot of fun is with the vegetables and the sides and the salads and things like that, and that's where I do put a twist on it, where I get out a little spice and do something a little different.
And if you had to pick one dish on Thanksgiving Day that would be your favorite, what would it be?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm assuming gravy isn't considered a dish.
What, do you drink it?
Pretty much. I would say, for me, possibly the stuffing, because it's something that I would never serve really any other time of year. You know, the vegetables I will have year-round, the potatoes, sweet potatoes, I'll make anytime. I think the stuffing is what is Thanksgiving.
Cranberry. Mm. Again, same thing. It's something you don't see, but for others, you know, any time of the year. And I've got a couple of things I love to play around with on that.
All right, we'll talk about that next. Anna, quickly.
Mashed potatoes. Hands down.
All right. Slice it down the middle and step aside. You're going to see a man eating pumpkin pie. When it's cold and clammy, I like it a lot, but I really love it when it's hot. Two pieces now, one laid by. Keep it undercover, 'cause it's pumpkin pie. Pumpkin pie, pumpkin pie. If I don't get it, I'm gonna die.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Thanksgiving Day food, the turkey, the sides, and much more. We're with Anna Sortoon, executive chef and co-owner of Oleana Restaurant and Sofra Bakery here in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Barton Seaver, named Chef of the Year by Esquire magazine in 2011, director of the Sustainable Seafood and Health Initiative at the Harvard School of Public Health. And Bridget Lancaster, executive food editor for New Media, television and radio at America's Test Kitchen, part of Cook's Illustrated. Let's go to Cambridge, Massachusetts. Sarah is on the line. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I have a sister-in-law who is just recently no longer eating dairy but really loves pumpkin pie. So I'd love to know, specifically with the Cook's Illustrated recipe that actually calls for a cup of heavy cream and a cup of whole milk, whether you'd recommend a cup of coconut milk and a cup of almond milk or something else entirely.
Sarah, thank you. Bridget Lancaster.
I probably wouldn't go with all coconut or all almond. I would probably mix the two. The heavy cream, if you omit that, you're getting rid of some of the fat. Can she take butter?
She can't, unfortunately.
Okay. So I would add then, I would use half almond milk, half coconut milk, and I would add a couple of tablespoons of refined coconut oil, which is also a great way to make a pie crust if you don't want to use butter in a pie crust because it acts like butter. It's very nice and thick, and it cuts into the flour. So all those together, you should be able – that pumpkin pie should be great.
Terrific. Sarah, good luck. Thank you. Here's Jennifer in Austin, Texas. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for picking up my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
I wanted to, talk to the woman trying to accommodate her vegan guests. The issue of butter, I've worked in a couple of vegan restaurants and a vegan bakery, and, the most, popular of the butter replacements is this brand called Earth Balance. It's a pretty good mock-up of butter, and a lot of people don't notice the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was also going to say that vegans get really excited about vegan gravy, and it's really easy to make, and it's something that you can put on, all the sides that are, vegan-friendly, mashed potatoes, and, if you're going to make the stuffing, and, all you have to do is just, have broth, and, maybe some chopped mushrooms, and, sage and thyme. Make a roux, and I don't know. They'll be thankful.
Sounds good.
They'll feel like they got something hearty,
Awesome. Jennifer, thank you. Thank you very much. I promise before the break we get to the cranberries. Barton Siever, so talk to us about cranberry sauce.
Well, I think getting back to the question of, how do we accommodate tradition but also have fun as cooks and do something new, that cranberry sauce is one of those things that it's super easy to have a couple of different variations on the table at any time. You make it a couple of days ahead of time, and it actually keeps getting better. It's like a stew in that way. My wife requires cranberry sauce to have the ring mold of the can still visible on it.
That's my kind of girl.
Which, hey, we live in New England. That's a local product.
Yes.
Up here supporting the cranberry farmers in Massachusetts. Good by them. But I take that opportunity to do something fun. Last year I did butter and brown sugar till it caramelized, and I threw celery and walnuts into that until those caramelized together and created this nice, thick, rich, sort of soupy, nutty mixture. Threw the cranberries into that, a little orange juice, and then a little bourbon on the side because, it's just fun to drink while we're cooking in Thanksgiving, of course. And just a shot of the bourbon at the very end. And it was a wonderful, textured, fun cranberry dish that was wholly unexpected, and people could retreat quickly back to their ring mold, jellied cranberry if they wanted.
But they wish,
good opportunity for
that's
tradition.
That's great. Anna Sartoon, you wanted to talk about farmers markets at this time of year.
Yeah, I think we're so lucky in New England because we experience a phenomenon called cold sweetening. So the vegetables, they hang on to their sugars during moderate temperatures, and they sort of save them until that first light frost, and as soon as it starts getting colder, those sugars are released. So we're the result are basically the best tasting vegetables of the season, the entire season, are right now. And today, at least in Boston, is our last day at the farmers market, and a perfect day to stop and grab all your veggies for Thanksgiving. But it really is a pleasure to enjoy the best vegetables of the season with the turkey, mashed potatoes, and stuffing.
So we heard a little bit about pies with our caller at the beginning here. Talk to us a little bit more about pumpkin pies, other pies, pecan pies. Can every dessert, does it have to be sugar? Is there some other alternative? What do you think, Bridget Lancaster?
My birthday is around this time of year, and traditionally we would go to my grandmother's house, and she was a great pie baker. So I always had pie for my birthday instead of cake. I think you have to have either or all three, apple, pumpkin, pecan. I love, in addition to that, sweet potato pie. It's one of my favorites, being from the South. You have to have a little sweet potato in there. And then if you wanted to break it up with something really bright – this is my old birthday pie lemon meringue pie is the great thing to finish that really heavy meal with, because it's very light, it's acidic, and it brightens things up.
Mm. Anna Sertun, tell us what you brought here.
We always we garnish the pies with a lot of other things. So we have our traditional pies. My mother-in-law makes amazing pies. But we also bring some treats. I bring some treats home with me from Sofra. And we do a little sesame cashew bar, which is a family favorite, which is kind of like the pecan pie gone cashew and sesame seeds. Same effect, really caramely inside. But instead of the pecans, we use cashews and sesame seeds. And we do an apricot sweet that's just basically dried apricots pureed with orange blossom water and then dipped in chocolate. And that's
also
something.
So that doesn't sound like something I could make. Not to dumb this down, but how do you make it accessible to people who can actually cook it in their own kitchen?
Right, just pureeing the dried apricots with a little orange blossom water. It's so much easier than making a pie crust. Mm. It's super easy. But mm-hmm. I think also on Thanksgiving, people are looking for the pumpkin pie. You can't do that without you can't do Thanksgiving without the pumpkin pie. So we like to garnish our pies with other sweets.
Barton, what do you think?
You know, I'm actually not much of a sweet person. By the end of it, I'm actually still sort of spooning out the cranberry sauce, to be perfectly honest with you. But I'm with you, the pumpkin pie. And I've got a good memory of a cat falling off the top ledge of our kitchen into the warm pumpkin pie and coming in to ruin Thanksgiving dinner. But so forever part of our legend.
Ava is in Boston, Massachusetts. Ava, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Of course.
I have a recipe, or actually I'm trying to work out a recipe that my aunt made. And, of course, she took the recipe with her when she ended up in the cemetery. But so what it was it was like a chopped cranberries with fresh cranberries with pecans and brown sugar. And that was on the bottom of the sometimes she'd use a casserole dish. Sometimes she'd use a pie plate. And there was batter on top. Now, it wasn't as light as a cake batter, like a pineapple upside down cake. And it wasn't as crunchy as, say, like a cookie dough. But it was somewhere in between. But it was excellent. I mean, when she put it in the pie plate, it was, you know, it was very, it looked nice. And you'd cut into it and you'd scoop it out and turn it upside down so the cranberries are on top. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Sounds delicious. Ava, thank you. What a great memory. Here's Jim in Randolph, Vermont with another one. Jim, welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Welcome from Cajun Moon Farm in Randolph.
Excellent. Welcome to you.
Finished processing, and I'm delivering 28 turkeys today. Just got done feeding the pigs. Just want to thank all the people that do support the local farms. We had a pretty good year. We pre-sold 35 turkeys.
Mm, wonderful. Excellent. Jim, good luck today, and thanks for the call. Here's Nadine in Boston. Hi, Nadine. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And happy early Thanksgiving.
Yes, to you.
I am a first-generation American. My mom is from Liberia, and my dad is from Ghana. So we have a sort of blended bicultural Thanksgiving, but we'll have, like, typical American Thanksgiving mains, and then we'll have some staple African dishes as well. And so I was looking for what is kind of a surefire hit that kind of crosses cultural lines that may be, like, appealing to most palates.
Hmm. Good. Nadine, thank you. What do you think?
Well, that's a fun one.
Yeah, that's a very
fun one. Just the first thing comes up to mind, thinking of that parts of Africa, Liberia, Ghana, I'm thinking okra. Mm. And doing an okra casserole, like a green bean casserole, which is one of the classic favorites, but doing it with okra and allowing that to sort of thicken and stew in its own way and top it with the crispy shallots or onions. Be kind of fun.
All right, Nadine, thank you. What about chef on a shoestring ideas? This meal can get really expensive really fast. Any advice for some less expensive, cheaper alternatives as we look down the menu here?
And silence fill the room.
I guess not.
Well,
stuck?
If you think about what's on the menu, it shouldn't be expensive. Turkey any other time of the year is not expensive. This time of the year, it's really expensive. I would say that if you wanted to do a small turkey breast, that's obviously going to save cost. You can have something like a ham on the side or a roast pork or something as well. I think if you keep pecans are really expensive this time of year, so maybe, you know, cut back on the amount that you're using there.
Hmm. Anna Sortoon, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think it does add up, especially if you go for the whole nine yards. But I agree that cutting down on some of the things that they raise for, because it's a seasonal ingredient, the price goes up for pecans and turkey. But maybe supplementing your turkey with another, buying a bunch of turkey legs instead of doing the whole bird.
Do I dare ask Top Chefs your biggest disaster in the kitchen, whether Thanksgiving or otherwise?
Hey, I don't know if I can beat the cat story in the pie.
I think just the biggest disaster would be that it's not really a disaster, but, so much of Thanksgiving is the gathering. And as Bridget and everybody is talking about, so much planning goes into this meal that once the gathering begins, so much of your best laid plans can go to ruin, especially when the bourbon comes out or, the wine starts flowing and things can just drag on. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a disaster, but rather a real desire to take advantage of what Thanksgiving is really about, gathering with friends, spending time with them, not hold away just in a kitchen. And then the meal actually ends up suffering.
Bridget Lancaster, what about leftovers? Casseroles, sandwiches, turkey stock. What do you think? Talk to us about good Thanksgiving leftovers.
Yes to all of those. I love leftovers to me are the best part of Thanksgiving. And another way to make a really inexpensive Thanksgiving is to actually have it a couple days later when everything's gone on sale at the supermarket. But for leftovers, you've got to take that turkey carcass, go back to the store, pick up a package of wings as well, and put those into a nice stock pot. Start to make your turkey soup. You can actually brighten that up with chilies, some Thai basil at the end. Make it really, really hot and spicy. That's also a great sinus and cold buster. And then for things like mashed potatoes, it's great to keep on hand for making a turkey pot pie. You can put that right underneath the mashed potatoes. Basically, you can't go wrong with the old turkey sandwich as well.
Ideas for leftovers, Barton Siever?
I love that turkey pot pie. I make a turkey pho, the noodle soup, taking a nice rich broth, adding into that a little lemongrass, a little lime leaf, a little basil, something like that, taking something completely different flavor to take you away from the richness that, we've spent a couple days enjoying.
Mm. Anna Sortoon.
I love making shredded potato pancakes the next day. We take a raw potato, shred it, get it really crispy, and stuff it with the leftover mashed potatoes.
Oh.
And turkey soup, it wouldn't be the day after without some turkey soup.
Sal is in Florida with the call. Welcome to you, Sal.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. So I've had problems with the elephant in the room. So this year, I've mastered Cornish hens. Everyone is getting a Cornish hen, and I'm topping it off with a kale, sweet potato, and cranberry with pecan dressing.
Mm, sounds wow. Delicious.
Sounds really good.
Yeah, and smart.
Absolutely.
Here's Nancy in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to On Point. You're on.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
On your show, I have developed a method to serve 30 to 35 people and not make myself crazy doing it. I make two turkeys, and then I have four breasts, four drumsticks, four thighs. It goes a lot further that way. One I make the day before. I take the skin and the bones off, chunk it up into serving sizes, and then I make my gravy from that turkey, put a little of the gravy on that prepared turkey in the pan, save the rest for the big boat. And then the following day, I make another turkey, and that's the one for the presentation.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a good idea.
It's a great idea.
Before.
I love that idea. Yeah, love the idea, and then you have all those bones to work with, too.
Nancy, thank you. All right, we're down to our last minute or so here. Give us some last-minute tips, last-minute advice for a really terrific Thanksgiving.
Set the table now.
Oh, you talked about that.
That's right.
Get it set early. That's your
Jane. It's the hardest thing for me. It takes me 5 hours to do the table, and it's just because I've got to get all these glasses that I don't use all year, and make sure the tablecloth's all right. So I like to get the table out of the way. I actually like to set the table 2 days before Thanksgiving, so that
All I need to do is cook, and I don't need to run around at the last minute looking for another fork or another this or that. So that totally de-stresses the holiday for me.
Excellent.
I would say, you know, as you're planning out your meal, plan who's going to make what dish with you. Getting kids involved is a huge part of building tradition, honoring tradition that's been passed down to you. That's what's fun about Thanksgiving. Make sure to not forget that.
Thank you, Barton.
It's okay to ask for help. You can go to a bakery, buy a pie, buy some bread, or ask somebody to bring a dish to your house. Take the pressure off yourself.
Well, thanks very much for a really great hour, some delicious food and great advice. Anna Sortoon, executive chef and co-owner of Oleana and Sofra Bakery here in Massachusetts, outside Boston. Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bridget Lancaster, executive food editor at New Media. You know her from America's Test Kitchen, Cook's Illustrated Television Show. Thank you so much, Bridget.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
And Barton Seaver, director of the Sustainable Seafood and Health Initiative at the Center for Health and Global Environment at America at the Harvard School of Public Health. Barton, thank you so much.
Such a pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving to you all.
And to you. Thanks, listeners. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.